Hey, this is Father Voskin, priest of the Armenian Church, welcoming you to The Next Step, a podcast that looks at the very fabric of our being through the ancient lenses of Armenian Orthodoxy. But we polish it up for today. We call that polish Armodoxy, and we invite you right now to kick back, sit back, relax, unless you're driving, of course, and listen to The Next Step. This podcast is being brought to you by the good folks at epostle.net, apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe. So if you're ready, let's take the next step. Oh, what a beautiful Southern California morning. I don't want it any better. God's given us beautiful sun today. There's a little breeze going on, and we are together, a very special edition of The Next Step. We are completing 4 years of podcasting. Can you believe that? 4 years ago. Yeah, we started off with this idea of getting Armenian Orthodoxy out there. And so for 4 years, I know some of you have been there since the beginning, and I know some of you are taking maybe some slower steps. Some of you are taking baby steps, joining us right now, whatever the case may be. I'm just so glad you're here today. Because, you know, it's been 4 years that we've been coming into your homes, into your cubicles, into your cars, into your earbuds. I mean, if somebody told you, listen to this. Somebody told you this like 4 years ago. Okay, this priest is going to be talking into your ears about Armenian Orthodoxy. What would you have said? Yeah, sure. Okay, buddy, what planet are you from? Or okay, like, you know, what institution do you want me to sign up for? Wherever you're listening from, and if I'm in your ears right now, I'm just glad to be there. Of course, through the buds, via the buds. But what a beautiful day today is. A beautiful opportunity. Thank God for this opportunity. This opportunity really bring us so close together. And I've got to share with you some of the exciting things. First of all, we've got a great show for you today. We've got an author, writer, Lori Bedikian. She's going to be our guest in a few minutes. We've got, of course, Ani with her bubbles. We've got the song of the day. But let me share with you some of the things that happened over the week, because it has been a beautiful week. Did you see the transit of Venus? Oh, was that remarkable or what? Now, I gotta thank the solar eclipse, which took place a couple weeks ago, because it had me prepped. I had the welder's number 14 glasses ready to look. And then I heard about the transit of Venus. This Venus was going to go in front of the sun. It took place in 2004. Now, get this. The next time you would see it, be in the year 2117. So I cannot wait for another 105 years to see this. So what do? I get out there with my welder's mask, and I'm looking up at the sun, and there it was. There it was. Tiny little dot going across. Now, you know, I always talk about these cosmic events here on The Next Step, because I think it just points to the grand design of how beautiful life is. How in sync we are with the rest of the universe. I mean, people had predicted the transit of Venus years ago, and there it was, exactly at 3 o'clock on the West Coast. I'm looking up at the sun through these glasses, and there it is. It's just floating by the sun. You know, you say that, you know, does God have things in control? Absolutely. Sometimes things get messed up. Sometimes we don't understand what's going on in our lives. But God has the control. You just got to allow Him to have that control. Okay, so that takes place on Monday. Now, yesterday, now the world is coming closer. We're a smaller world. Yesterday, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I get a call from one of our listeners. Big shout out, big shout out to Opgar. Opgar calls me and he says, I'm 10 minutes away. Can I come and visit you? Whoa, Opgar. Now, who is Opgar? He's a listener from down under. Yes, one of our listeners from Australia is visiting us in Glendale. Now, I'm just like beyond myself. I'm like thinking, okay, like we always know, we always get these emails from people telling us, hey, I'm listening to you in Egypt, I'm listening to you in Armenia. I think the farthest place we ever tracked, well, Australia, definitely. I know we have a few listeners out there in New Zealand, but I think the kind of the weird one was somewhere in Asia. I can't remember exactly the place. St. Petersburg was one of them too. Okay, so we've got all these different places people listening to us. Now, one of our listeners has come to Glendale. And wonderful as it was yesterday, I think it was just really a perfect timing on it, because as we're completing 4 years of podcasting, you know, we have time for reflection. Like, what is it all about? And meeting Opgar and his lovely wife, Annette, we had a chance to talk about where the church is, where it's going. And in that small conversation, we were able to, you know, kick around some of the ideas about the bigger prospects. So it's not just a podcast, but where are we going? I mean, think about when we started off this podcast 4 years ago, we never expected to be where we're at, that we'd have listeners in Australia, in Asia. Actually, we've counted on 6 of the continents, okay? We've got people listening. But beyond that, there's a movement. There's a movement to say that we want something more out of our faith. It's not just something that we can wind up on Sundays, but that God that we're talking about has to be involved in our lives daily. And so 4 years ago, I never thought that it would not only be Next Step, but there would be a string of podcasts. And so I'm very happy that here we are at the end of 4 years, and we've got a show like Compass. Did you get a chance to listen to Compass last week? If you didn't get a chance, please listen to it. I believe it was number 26. Linda Zadoyan, she comes up with these challenging, I think it's so beautiful because they challenge the listener to really think beyond just what's being thrown out. I mean, even the Next Step or Questions of Faith, all the different programmings that we have, it's not just to sit there and lecture, but it's to sit there and engage you in a dialogue. And I really felt that in this last Compass. She was talking about giving and receiving, and then there was another element in there of taking. And how do you put all that? Giving, receiving, taking. And is it really true Jesus says it is better to give than to receive? Do you believe that? Can you buy that? Well, listen in. But this is the kind of podcasting, of broadcasting, of quality work that we're putting together. So I'm very, very thankful. I thank God for this opportunity, completing 4 years. We're looking forward to year 5 starting next year. And a great podcast coming up today. Let me give you one more thing. Did you catch the Queen's Jubilee?
Her Majesty's a pretty nice girl, but she doesn't have a lot to say. Her Majesty's a pretty nice girl, but she changes from day to day. I wanna tell her that I love her a lot, but I gotta get a belly full of wine. Her Majesty's a pretty nice girl, someday I'm gonna make her mine, oh yeah, someday I'm gonna make her mine.
Well, I really think that she has become ours. I mean, even if you don't live in England, in the United Kingdom, I mean, you still feel like you know this person. It was an interesting jubilee. I think for me, it was especially interesting just seeing the old rockers. You see like Paul McCartney and Elton John. These people, I've gotten old. I hate to admit that. But there was Paul McCartney doing All My Lovin' and the Archbishop of Canterbury. Rock into it. I mean, that was beautiful. And it's interesting because in my head, you know how I have to analyze these things. It's interesting because higher than the religions or the faiths that bring and bind people together is God's language. And that God's language, of course, is mathematics or music. And, you know, to me, you've heard me in the past talk about music and mathematics being these pure forms of language. And there it was. You find this music, All My Loving, is, you know, as crass as that may sound to you, but there it is, the Beatles coming and bringing together generations and even faiths. And there you have the Archbishop of Canterbury just groove into the tunes. And so watching this, it was a very, very special moment for me. Now, here was an interesting thing. You had Barack Obama from the United States calling up the Queen and wishing her well. Yeah, happy anniversary, Queen. And you think about it. Now, wait, Barack Obama, doesn't he represent that group of rebels? Doesn't he represent that country that crossed the pond and got away from the United Kingdom, that had a revolution and broke off? And then you start thinking as an Armenian, and you go, oh, man. So do you think, like, in 200 years, like, an Armenian could call up the president of Turkey and say, hey, happy birthday? I don't know. But it gets you to think a little bit, right? That nothing is permanent, that our hatreds are really things that we build up, and at some point we need to extend ourselves beyond the hatred. And, you know, this is what we've been talking about for the last 4 years through this podcast, definitely the last 30 years through my priesthood, that the Christian message is an incredible message. It is a message that a victory, not a victim, but a victory, that we can reach out, we can go beyond. Now, let's go beyond 30 years. Let's go to the time of, well, when it all began, when it came to Armenia. There were two disciples named Thaddeus and Bartholomew, and then 300 years later, we had St. Gregory the Illuminator come to Armenia. Now, if you haven't caught last night's Questions in Faith, if you didn't catch last Sunday's sermons, please do, because the guy who's speaking last night and last Sunday, he did a great job of bringing together Hrypsime, Gayane, Gregory, and Etchmiadzin. Suffice it to say that today I'm not going to be going into that. I'm going to just tell you that this weekend is the feast of St. Gregory's deliverance from the pit, and Sunday is the feast of Holy Etchmiadzin. Etchmiadzin is mission. I want to just throw that out. Now, next week I'm going to talk about that, because His Holiness of blessed memory, Kadek King I, he came up with the statement that Etchmiadzin is mission, and it's been really ringing in my head lately, especially with the feast coming up right now. Etchmiadzin is a place, definitely in Armenia, it's a building. But Etchmiadzin also means the descent of the only begotten. Imagine the descent of Christ. That's the mission of Christ coming down into our lives. And I want to share some ideas with you. So just, this is a preface to next week. It's really a preface to what we're doing all week long. If you get a chance, do check out the sermon from last week. It's on my sermons page. You could get it actually at epostle.net. It's all there. All of our programming is there. Check out the sermon. Check out Questions of Faith last night. We talked about this in detail. Especially the idea of, when you know that something is difficult, how do you overcome your fears? How do you overcome the anxiety? How do you overcome the obstacles? Do you go and you fight the mountain and try to tear it down? Or are you like the small little river that knows that you have a destination? You have a project in life. You've got to get from point A to point B. So in going that, you go around the mountain. The mountain's the obstacle, but you go around it to get to your destination. And once you start realizing that you have that power, you realize that you can get anywhere, despite any obstacle. I was yesterday, a lady came and she was discussing with me some difficulties that she's been through lately in her life. She was talking about some relations that had gone sour and the idea that evil had come in. She really wanted to identify it as evil. And to me, it's just maybe another part of human nature. People of betrayal, of sadness, of hatred, of people trying to hurt people. And she actually brought it down to terms of, like, what do we do when the devil comes into our life? What do we do when Satan comes into our life? Well, whatever way you want to describe it, you want to talk about the devil, you want to talk about evil, you want to talk about difficulties in your life. There's a few ways that you can approach it, right? You can stand up and try to conquer it by knocking it down, or you can go on with what you need to do. And you think about how Jesus dealt with it. Think about the Jesus story. Right after his baptism, he goes off into the wilderness and he is tempted 3 times by the devil. First time is, hey, here's some stone, change it into bread. Jesus says, man does not live by bread alone. He says, okay, fine, here's a big building, let's jump off of it. And if you're really the Son of God, God will send his angels and catch you. You know, like the Superman movie. You know, when Lois Lane falls down off of the Empire State Building or one of those buildings, right? Superman came, whoop, and picked her up. Well, that whoop is the way most people think of God. Probably that's the way that the devil was trying to do it. And Jesus said, hey, we're not interested in testing God. And then finally the devil said, hey, here is all of the kingdoms of earth. It's all yours. All you got to do is strike a deal with me. Worship me, and you can have all that. Now, this is the important part. Jesus says, this is not what it's all about. And instead of fighting him, he says, get behind me. Actually, think about it. What he said is go to hell. That's exactly where it comes from, right? Go to hell. Where do you belong, devil? You belong in hell. Go to hell. That's what he said to the devil. Now, you can use that expression exactly. This is where that expression comes from, okay? Jesus said to the devil, go to hell. In other words, get out of my life. Now, you can do that in your life, too. You can fight evil. You could try to tear it down, or you can circumvent it. It's going to exist there. You could try to bring down evil. You could fight it, or you can go around it and get on with your business, get on with your life. And you'll find if you can get on with your life, that evil, like it or not, is gonna be away from you, is going to go into the background, is going to go to hell, is going to get out of your sight. Interesting, right? The devil came three times, kept trying to wear him down. And Jesus at any one of those times could have said, okay, you know, the first time he could have said, okay, hey, you know what? I'm not going to do what you want, but instead of making it into bread, I'm going to make that those stones into water, because, you know, scientists have told me that I can live without food, but I can't live without water. So I'm going to change it into water. So he could have negotiated, but he doesn't. He says, no. No way, Jose. The second time, the devil again tries to wear him down. Jesus could have sat down, hey, let's discuss this, okay? Maybe God's not going to pick me up the way you want to, but I know God will save. No, he just says, no, we're not going to do it. No way. Jose. The third time he says, go to hell. Get out of here. This is what we've got to do. We've got to be able to follow that Jesus example in our lives. Difficulties will always arise. You can fight them, you could try to bring them down, or you can go around them if the goal of your life is to get from point A to point B. Doesn't matter, you're driving a muscle car, you're driving a minivan. If you're driving a sports car, all of those vehicles will get you from point A to point B. But the ride getting from there is going to differ in each of those vehicles, right? Each of those vehicles are going to give you a different feel to the ride. And that's what you got to remember. You're going to get to the end point. What's the ride going to be like? Are you going to be struggling? Are you going to be pushing your head against a wall and slamming against the wall all the time? Or are you going to say that, hey, my life is something God has ordained me. God has given me this beautiful life. And I have a purpose in this life. And that purpose is not going to be hampered, stifled by you. I'm going to go forward. And you do it. You put that as your goal and you get on with your life. This week is the feast of Saint Etchmiadzin, Holy Etchmiadzin. It's a question of mission. It's a question of looking at the life of Saint Gregory the Illuminator, who was in the pit for 13 years, and he had so many difficulties, so many problems. In Armenian, they refer to Saint Gregory as Pazmacharchar. It means multiple suffering. He was suffering for 13 years, but at the end of it, he knew that he had to get from point A to point B, and he gets there. He gets there not by knocking down the mountain, but by going around it. And in so doing, the mountain gets thrown behind him. The conversion of Armenia. Armenia becomes a Christian nation. And, well, the rest is history, as they so say. So this week, we're going to be talking about Etchmiadzin as mission in the churches, and I'm going to be talking about it next week in our podcast. Actually, it's an appropriate one to start off our fifth year. For right now, we are going to listen to our song of the day like we do every week. Today I've picked out a, and when we get back, we're going to have a guest in the studio, Lori Bedikian. She's going to be talking about a book that she's recently written. I'll talk about that when we get back. For right now, we're going to be listening to the song of the day. I picked out a very special one, a little different. It's in the classical genre. It comes from Alan Hovhaness, and he has written this song called The Prayer of St. Gregory. Composer Alan Hovhaness. The song is The Prayer of St. Gregory. beautiful little tune to remind us that this weekend is the weekend of St. Gregory's deliverance from the pit and the feast of Holy Etchmiadzin. After coming out of the pit, the establishment of this beautiful structure called Etchmiadzin, and also the mission called Etchmiadzin, meaning the descent of the only begotten. Okay, as promised, we have an interview today with an author-writer, Lori Bedikian. Wonderful author, wonderful person. I want to introduce her to you. Well, I'm really happy that today I have a very dear friend of mine, someone I've known for ages, and this is Lori Bedikian. She is the author, writer, poet extraordinaire, in my life at least. She has recently published a book called The Book of Lamenting. And here on Next Step, if you've been a Next Step listener for a long time, you know that we had William Archilla many years ago. Not too many years, but many years ago. Happens to be, I don't know if he's your muse, but at least he's someone special in your life.
So, yes, definitely. Okay. Yeah, I would say so.
Laurie's husband was with us a few years ago. And I'm really delighted and happy, and I want to welcome Laurie to beautiful Epostle Studios today. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's an honor to be here.
Well, I'm really glad you made the time. And Lori, what an impressive book. Book
Thank
of
you.
Lamenting.
Thank you.
And it's an interesting thing because I know that deep down your Armenian roots play into it, as is evident in so many of the writings. So how about if we start off, just tell us a little bit about the book. Tell our listeners what the book is about, what inspired you, what got you there.
Sure, absolutely. Well, the book is, it's been decades since I've been, you know, writing, and I've been writing since I was a kid. But the book itself is in four parts, mm-hmm. and the first part is sort of inspired by a trip I took with my parents in 1997 to Lebanon and Armenia. And then the second part is more about family and whatnot, and the third part is more imaginative, and then the fourth part is about illness and healing and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So it's in four parts, mm-hmm. and it sort of spans those topics.
And it's a book of poetry.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
It's not a prose.
It's
not a travelogue. So
no, it's not. I wish it was, but it wasn't.
Well, it comes across. I mean, now when you said about the going through, it really does come across. Tell us about that trip. What was that trip about that inspired you to write this?
Well, what happened was my father found out that his eldest brother was dying. He, they let him know that there's not a lot of time left. And my parents and I never travel. We've never really traveled anywhere together before that, and we haven't really gone anywhere together after that. So it was a big deal. Mm-hmm. And we went to Armenia, we went to Lebanon, and we visited my relatives in Lebanon, and I was really, really inspired and just really touched by their courage, because they had endured and survived the civil war mm-hmm. in Lebanon. Mm-hmm. And so it was really special to me. And I found out that my father's eldest brother was a poet himself. And he took out poems on scraps of, you know, old paper, you know, the kind of paper that's all browned on the side, in Arabic and English, Armenian. He'd written all this stuff. And we also went to Armenia, and it was really special. I write about Lake Sevan a lot, and I write a lot about different, you know, the topography and the different things that we experienced while we were there.
Okay, so can we start off with a reading? How about if we start off with a reading and then talk a little bit more about the poetry that you have in this?
Sure, absolutely. I'll just start with the first poem of the book, because, like I say in many readings that I do, it sort of introduces not just the tone of the book, but sort of it's an introduction to who I am and sort of where the poems may or may not go. Mm-hmm. And it's called Beyond the Mouth. On the back of every tongue in my family, there is a dove that lives and dies. At night, when my aunts and uncles sleep, the birds comb their feathers, sharpen beaks. They are carriers not only of the olive branch, but the rest of our histories too. As from the ark, we came in twos, with tired eyes from Lebanon, Syria, the outskirts of Armenia, anywhere safety said its final prayers and died. Like every simile ever written, the doves on our tongues are tired and misread. Dinners begin with mounds of bread, dialogues piled between the older men. Near our dark throats, the quiet birds lurk to watch meals descend, take phrases that didn't reach the truth, and spin them into nests. Now and then, we spit them out in shapes of seeds, olive pits, spines of fish. The men never watch what enters past their teeth, what leaves their moving lips, and the doves know this. The women shut their mouths when they don't approve of the squawking laughs. There is a saying, or at least there should be, that if one doesn't believe what is said or true, they can ask the dove on the back of the tongue, and it will chirp the ugliness or the pitted truth of how we choke on what we hide.
Tell me, lamenting, I mean, to me, it's almost a word that Armenians understand in a different way. Do you feel your Armenian background gave you a unique perspective, or perhaps even an elevated perspective into this subject?
Right.
Tell me a little bit about the background in this.
Right. Well, I think it's so many things. It's so layered, you know. Mm-hmm. I know that being an Armenian, you have that, you know, some people would call it baggage. Some people would say, oh, you have that historical baggage. I don't necessarily think it's baggage, but I think it just means that being an Armenian, because of our history, because of all the suffering and everything, I think it sort of heightens our sensitivity, mm-hmm. not only to the world. Mm-hmm. When you hear a news story, you really open up. Your wounds are fresh always, mm-hmm. as an Armenian, but also to very personal wounds. So I feel that there's a heightened sensitivity when you're Armenian. You take things more seriously when something happens within your family, within relationships. When you see someone suffering, whether in school or in a hospital or whatever, it's almost as if you've been there, even if you haven't, because of the stories that have been passed down through generations over and over.
Do you think we take it too seriously? Do you think that it could even stifle us sometimes?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it can actually hinder us from moving on, or from progress, or from healing and whatnot. But I think what you need to do is you need to find out what your poetry is in life, what your art is in life. I dedicate the book to my grandmother's memory, Sion Abadjian. She was a genocide survivor, and I dedicate the book to her memory. And she was one who really knew the balance. She knew that in the morning she had to pray, and at night she had to pray, and she had to have that spiritual connection with God. And she suffered, and she was very sensitive to the suffering of others. However, she knew how to laugh, and she knew how to cook and love and speak. And so I think you need to find that balance, and you need to find out where your poetry is, you know.
And is it a personal thing? Is the poetry... I mean, you've produced a book, mm-hmm. which speaks to many people at different levels, right?
Mm-hmm.
So where's the personal? I mean, you as a poet have produced a book that is being read by different people. So where does Lori Bedikian come into it? Where does, like, if a Voskin was going to read this, how do I understand Lori? Or I don't know if...
I see what you're saying. I don't think I'm important anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Now that the book is there, all that matters is the book and the poems. I just happen to be the vehicle through which the poems emerged.
Ah, okay.
You know, I don't know. That's the way I look at it. Like, okay, God, I mean, other poets may not believe in God, but I believe that God put this, if you want to call it talent. Some people may read the book and say, I don't see any talent in this book. But, you know, you just say, okay, God gave me this calling. I'd rather call it a calling.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to write the poems, and they may either come from my historical background or my personal, familial, cultural, societal, economic background. It can come from any of those places. And I'm hoping that when someone reads the poem will speak to them and not my voice whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to lamenting. Krikor Naregatsi. Famous Armenian writer, churchman. filled with lamentation, a book of lamentation. He writes, Mari Gatsi, and Armenians swear by this. And you read that book, and it's a depression. It's like major depression.
<It's> like, yeah, that's
it's
true.
It's like, whoa, am I really that bad? And somehow in your poems, the poems that you got, it's the other side of it. It's okay, through the lamentation, we're finding some life. We're finding some relief there.
Right.
Tell
me
about where does that lamenting end, and how do you sort of, to bring it into Christian things, where's the crucifixion, where's the resurrection?
Right, right. Well, just to start off from what you said about lamenting and the depression and all that, you know, Khalil Gibran, the Lebanese-American poet, he wrote in The Prophet, he wrote, and I brought this up at a couple of readings that I did, he wrote that, and I'm paraphrasing, the depth of your sorrow is the depth of your happiness. Mm. So when he says that, to me, that means, wow, if I can feel all that sorrow, I have the capacity to feel just the same amount of joy. Mm-hmm. So basically, I've carved out this niche inside of me, this hollow, this grave, this whatever inside of me to be able to carry and fill myself with that much sorrow. So why can't I be capable of carrying that much joy as well? So I always make the joke when I'm doing a reading with people, I say, so obviously I wrote this book so that I could be extremely happy. You know, I wrote a book called The Book of Lamenting, so I could be extremely happy.
It's interesting. Yeah.
But yeah, after the crucifix, the resurrection, it's the same way in our lives. I mean, every time I've gone through something extremely difficult, for some strange reason, right afterwards, I'm elated. You know, it's just your viewpoint and how you sort of translate the lament, you know. Book of Lamentations, I mean, I think the most sorrowful things in art, in poetry, in our Armenian ancestry, in our music, you know, are the most beautiful. And my husband always says, you know, it's a sad and beautiful world. That's his thing. It's a sad, and I always say, don't say sad and beautiful. Beautiful is such a joyous thing. But I've come to understand why he says that. Because in all sadness, even there's a beauty.
Sure. Yeah. And I was talking to a friend the other day, and they were listening to this CD by Jivan Gasparian on the Duduk.
It says,
I shall be happy or I shall be sad no more, or something like
that. Yeah, yeah.
And the comment was, wow, what a downer. This is like, it is so sad. And even the music, everything we have, it's like, it is. There's tones of this lamentation, and then at the end of it, there's things. How about a poem that brings us out of that, or moves us from there? You could share something like that.
Okay, yeah. There's not too many in here, but I think I'll read a short poem. It's called Prayer for My Immigrant Relatives, and I don't know if it'll lift us out of that, but it does have us. It's like an elegy, a traditional elegy, where it starts with sadness. However, there's hope, and it's in the form of a pseudo sonnet. Prayer for My Immigrant Relatives. While they wait in long lines, legs shifting, fingers growing tired of holding handrails, pages of paperwork, give them patience. Help them to recall the cobalt Mediterranean or the green valleys full of vineyards and sheep. When people's words resemble the buzz of beehives, help them to hear the music of home, sung from balconies overflowing with woven rugs and bundled vegetables. At night, when the worry beads are held in one palm and a cigarette lit in the other, give them the memory of their first step onto solid land after much ocean, air, and clouds. Remind them of the phone call back home saying, "We arrived. Yes, thank God we made it. We are here."
Arriving. What you're talking about, lamenting, the sadness, the depression, goes against everything we're taught is important. I mean, when you look at what culture tells us, what society is telling us all around, and I'm sure everywhere, but particularly here in the West, in American society, we're told, you know, he who has the most toys at the end wins, you know. Donald Trump is somebody who fires the people who are weak and rewards the people who make it. Everything that we do, I mean, how does this fit in? I mean, what are you talking about? When you're talking about lamenting, are you just off? Are we?
Am I crazy?
Well, maybe. Here's the question. I mean, what value is there in this? Would it be right for a critic to look at you and say, Lori, you know, you're talking about things that don't matter. We should be after going after the dollar. What value is there in that sadness?
Right. Well, the critics can say anything, and that's why they're critics. You know, they have their purpose in the world, and that's what makes the world go round. But I'll say this: there's a lot of value in recognizing our own suffering, recognizing the suffering of others. The value is that what comes out of it is illumination, revelation, and with that comes wisdom. And wisdom is the only way to progress. If you have not learned from the past, and if you're not learning from the present, there's really no need to go on in the future.
Beautifully said, yeah. Wisdom is the only the only way to progress. I love that. Yeah. And so that does come, the wisdom comes out of
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, when I sit to write a poem, I don't know what's going to come out of it. But I'm always hoping that I'll teach myself something. And then if I can learn, I'm hoping that will help inspire someone else.
All right, let me ask you the other question then. Yeah. Without the suffering, can you get to that wisdom?
Without the suffering?
Yeah, is it possible without the suffering, without the lamenting, can you get to that wisdom?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it just might be that some people have more troubles than others. Some people have less troubles than others. But absolutely, I mean, I was just thinking about it this morning, just looking at a crow on the front lawn, in the front lawn, was the most beautiful thing. And there's no suffering in that.
You have appreciated that crow because of
past suffering?
Well, past suffering in the sense that you've looked at life and seen that, you know, this does matter. This small little crow does matter more than, you know.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Absolutely. I think every single human being suffers. I don't care how much money you have. I don't care how shiny your car is. I don't care. Everybody suffers. It's just how are you dealing with it? How are you dissecting it? How are you looking at it? And I'm not saying people should wallow in their sorrow. No. I'm saying face it head on. Find out what meaning it has, and then see what you can turn it into for the betterment of yourself or someone else. And if you can't do that, you're just going to be a walking zombie, you know, kind of thing.
Let's then move to the last portion of your book, which you talk about healing, because there is a suffering which many people, I think, would feel like you have absolutely no control.
Right.
It comes on you. At least in my case, and I know we've talked offline about this too, you know, that it does all of a sudden when an illness comes on you, you realize, wait, I thought I was in control, and wait a minute, I'm not.
Right,
you
know, exactly.
And so you end up your book, the fourth portion of your book is dedicated to healing. Tell me a little bit about that. What made you go in that direction?
Right.
To find that resurrection. So to speak.
Right. Well, about over a decade ago, I was diagnosed with a couple of things, and it was very traumatic. I mean, I never thought that so early on I would have to battle illnesses and whatnot. And it affected me deeply, and I thought, oh, it's a death sentence. And then I found out, no, nothing is a death sentence. Hmm. Not even a death sentence. There's no such thing as that. But what happened was, I thought, well, if I just deal with this, nothing else will happen to me. And then about 2 years ago, I had more things happen to me. And then I thought, okay, so the body's not perfect. But what is perfect is how we deal with what comes our way. It can be beautiful. Like the way that we deal with illness, the way that we deal with healing. You know, the fact that I was able to take my hand and write poems out of what had happened is beautiful. Mm-hmm. The poems aren't beautiful. I'm not saying anything about my poems. I'm saying it's beautiful that you can create something out of something that may be looked upon as ugly or unfortunate or whatnot. Right. And the only hope I have is that when you tell the truth and you share, that someone else will either find courage in it or some kind of companionship, you know? Yeah.
So the healing is it something in process right now that you're trying to discover, or did you all of a sudden find some revelation that, wow, this is it?
I think we've always been healing since we were young. I mean, I never thought about that, what you're asking me, but I guess we've always been healing. You know, as children, when we're punished, we heal for what, about half an hour? We cry and we sob that the toy was taken away, and then we're fine, right? As we get older, the healing takes a little longer, you know? Yeah. Heartache when we're teenagers. Oh, he broke up with me. Oh, no, my life will never be the same. And then we can't remember their names. And then the next thing you know, oh no, I failed this class. And then you forget what class it was. And then, you know, so it goes on and on. So yeah, I mean, I'm still,
why is it harder then? Wouldn't it make sense that it would be easier to deal with suffering as we got older? But it you're right, it is harder.
It is harder because I think it's more recent. I think it's new. Yeah, okay. But I mean, what I went through a decade ago is not a big deal anymore. 2 years ago, what I went through was a lot easier to go through than what happened 10 years ago. So it actually does get easier.
Okay, good. That's
and I think when you follow your calling in life, you realize that how fortunate you are. Mm-hmm. Because when you say to yourself, oh, you know, like for my own example, oh, right, poetry, that's my calling. Okay, so no matter what happens, I still have this. Mm-hmm. I can still follow this. Mm-hmm. No matter what, I can still do what I was meant to do. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how long it'll be, how long I'll be on the planet Earth, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Oh, that's beautiful. How about a healing poem?
Okay. Before I read, I'll just say that in 1997, I actually got in a really bad car accident. And I think it was 97. It doesn't matter when it was, but I got in a really bad car accident. It was very traumatic. That whole, you know, realizing, oh, we could go just in an instant, you know. So that sort of inspired this poem. And so I wrote about that as well. And I won't say more. I'll just read it. Prayer in the back of the mind. There must have been a reason for sliding into a scream, for navigating the hood into just enough of a crumpled fist. The rain slanted just before the old four-door spiraled, hydroplaned its gray skull. For the steering wheel stuck between a concrete wall and my body, I am grateful. And there must have been a reason when my eyes puckered up and pulled the nerves along my face into harps. I have faith in the strange small scars that speak to cerebrum cerebellum, that show how lament is marked like scratches on a battered door. Help my cells chant their liturgy again. Help the buckled ride into a tunnel of light to see what my body grieves so I may stop spinning through this hum. I am grateful for this neurological mess made of rain and nerves. May it conjure up an answer thick as a metal chassis. May it give me a reason clear as a downpour of light.
Wow. Oh, I love that. No, you know, because as we were going...
So there's the hope.
Well, yeah, and I was thinking back on, you know, illness does bring this uncertainty. Right. And it's no different than an accident.
No.
Which you're driving along and then all of a sudden...
Pow. Boom,
and life changes immediately.
Yeah.
Life is all of a sudden, you've got a different concept.
Right,
It just hits you.
Right.
Basically, life is just full of accidents, right?
Right, right.
That get us to start believing...
Yeah, some good, some bad.
Yeah, believing in negative, or if we could channel it the proper way, take that negative and make it into something beautiful.
And
you've done that. That is beautiful. Thank you.
I just wanted to think of what I was grateful for after that had happened. You know?
And just that you're able to open your eyes afterwards is,
is
something to be able to say thank you.
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely. Yeah,
wild. Yeah. All right, Lori, thank you. This is beautiful. Now, okay,
thank you.
We got... listeners and saying, okay, well, am I going to go out and get this book of lamenting? I'm pretty down right now.
Oh, no.
How about if you leave us with a parting shot? Leave us with, what do you want us to take? What do you want the listener to take away? Can you share with us another poem? And
Sure.
Hey, you know, I want to tell our listeners that Lori and I, we've been discussing, she's been gracious enough to offer a fundraiser for In His Shoes, where she'll come and do some poetry reading. She'll have her book available. And so hopefully a lot of you in the area we'll set up a time and you'll be able to come out and join us and meet Lori face to face. But in the meantime, how about right now? How about something that you could, a parting shot? Or,
I know
there's some special ones in there.
Yeah, well, I just want to say, I want to actually bring up something from the poet Adrienne Rich. She just passed away recently, and she was so inspiring. She was a feminist. She was a great, great poet. And she wrote this poem called Diving into the Wreck, from her book Diving into the Wreck. And I had this quote up on my wall for years. She says, it's a quote from the poem. She says, I came to explore the wreck. The words are purposes. The words are maps. I came to see the damage that was done and the treasures that prevail. So I love that. I know. I love that because to me, that's everything in life. Everything. So, I mean, a thought that I'd like to leave people with is Adrienne Rich's thought, which is every damage that's done in our life, there's a treasure that prevails out of that. Mm-hmm. You can get a poem out of it. It doesn't matter what you get out of it. But whatever happens, there's some treasure behind it. Mm-hmm. You know, you can look at it that way. It depends.
I think that's what everybody kind of looks for.
Right.
Is that, you know, life is tough enough.
Right.
Can we make some sense out
of
it?
Yeah, exactly.
Out of the ridiculous.
Yeah,
Out of the bizarre, you know.
And one place where I've always found some kind of beauty or some kind of calm or peace is through road trips. Mm-hmm. And I love road trips because I love the topography. I love the land. I love seeing, you know, God's beauty. I just love that. And, you know, I like the other stuff too, like wearing sweats or eating snacks or listening to really bad music mm-hmm. or something, screaming at the top of my lungs, you know. So I'll close with the title poem of the book, which is inspired by road trips. And like I said, the book is dedicated to the memory of my grandmother, Siona Bajian. The Book of Lamenting begins on edges of highways, where the sun raises its swollen belly, grasses outgrow themselves, vineyards wither their nerves. The sun cracks the dashboard, slithers between rows of eucalyptus, juniper, rolls along the wheels of trucks. Past crows that caw, pod atop railroad crossings, the engine cranks its monotonous pulse, distracts me from posted signs, the yellow snake that guides me along. This is where I find reasons to question the living. My father's face held in his hands, his brows etched in the stained glass of the missions. My mother's sacrifice, dwelling in deserted turnpikes, her eyes gazing from overgrown orchards. Trees disappear, dried brush crumbles into camel's fur. In the distance, no horizon but tumbleweed large as sheep. This is where I am when the world has closed its ears. Alongside rusted tractors, abandoned fruit stands, roaming for hours, nothing but barbed wire fences, nothing but the smells of harvest and gasoline. The road matters more than the earth, more than those on the road. It turns into a spine, ladder of teeth and bone. In the passenger seat, my grandmother's ghost holds a palm full of seeds, scatters them skyward for the crows to eat. All of it behind us now, she tells me not to tangle my nerves, not to stop the creed of the open road. Nothing that runs can stay the same.
Thank you. Wow.
Thank you.
That in itself is a road trip, isn't it?
Huh? Sort of, huh? Yeah. Writing it was like,
yeah. Yeah, it takes you from one place to the next.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, thank you.
Thank you.
Lori, I want to thank you for being with us today. Again, to our listeners, we'll have a link on our show notes so you could check out the book. Do check it out. More importantly, grab a copy of it. And then when you come to the event that we're going to have today, before you leave the studio, we'll set up a date, okay?
Yes.
So we'll announce that soon. And when you come to the event, then you'll know who Lori is. You'll say, wow, Lori, what made you put that period where there should have been a comma?
Oh, no, nightmare. My editor's back.
Anyway, it is always a pleasure to see you, to be with you, to share
likewise.
Some
thoughts.
Oh,
likewise. Thank you so much.
And good luck with everything. God be with you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Hope you enjoyed that interview. Hey, listen, the harpist tells us it is time for Ani's Spiritual Bubbles. Sit back, relax, blow a few. You'll enjoy this one.
Today's spiritual bubble is about the doll maker. In a little village, there lived a craftsman by the name of Bun who made wooden dolls for children. Bun was so naturally gifted in his craftwork that his fame spread to neighboring villages. People from all over the region came to buy wooden dolls from him or bring them their broken for repairs. He carefully studied the broken dolls and looked for the best way to mend it such that it looked exactly the way it was when he first made it. Bun had a little daughter for whom he made a very beautiful doll on her 10th birthday. The little girl was so much in love with her little doll that she played with it with all of her friends. One day, while playing with the doll, it got broken, and the little girl ran to her father and cried. When she got to him, she complained that her doll's arm got broken while she was playing with it. The father took the time to listen to her complaints, and then told her to leave the doll with him and come back later for it. The little girl said, "No, Daddy, you don't understand. All I want you to do is carve out another arm and polish it, and use some glue or a nail to join it back. That's all." Her father still tried to explain to her to leave the doll with him and come back for it after some time, because he made the doll and he knows how to best mend it when it is broken. The little girl grew impatient and said to her father, "Daddy, you're not going to do it the way I want. You're too slow." And with that statement, the little girl grabbed her doll and left her father's workshop. The father called out after her, but she wouldn't come back, and he felt so sad. Just like that little girl, most of us take our problems to God and try to dictate how He should solve them to Him. We often fail to realize that God made us, and He understands how best to handle all our daily problems if left at His feet. This has been your spiritual bubble. May it float on the wind to heaven.
Thank you, Ani, for that wonderful message today. Hurt bubbles, you know, they just take your head to different places, don't they? Hey, if you can't get enough and you want a little bit more of Ani, I'm going to share with you her blog spot. And it is at botchigzenlove.blogspot.com. And we'll put a link on our show notes from this point on. If I know many of you have been following Ani on her nursing blog. This one is more personal, she tells me. And she says a lot of our fans might be interested in knowing about this one. So from this point on, if you look at the show notes next to Ani's name, we will have this blog spot. And do check it out. She writes about all kinds of stuff going on in her life. And I got to tell you, she is probably the most popular personality in the whole Epostle lineup. People ask about her, want to know, want more, definitely want more. And we just are so blessed to have her voice coming in every week as a bubble, as a spiritual bubble. So thank you, Ani, for that message today. And do check out her blog. Now, what would today's show, the end of 4 years, be without Susie making her announcement? Here's Susie, tell you how to get involved.
Before getting back to the next step with Father Vazgen, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this ministry is supported through the heartfelt donations of listeners like you. Thanks for keeping us in your prayers and partnering with this expanding and dynamic outreach. We are now in the fourth year of broadcasting and pleased that this voice of Armodoxy is being heard by a worldwide audience. During these past 4 years, we have consistently produced the next step as a gift to our listeners. Please consider partnering in this dynamic ministry by making a contribution. By pressing on the donate button on our website, you can set up automatic donations, either weekly, monthly, or annually. Your donation goes a long way in furthering this ministry. Even more, tell your friends and family by sharing the Next Step link or website with them. We're on iTunes and Blueberry, as well as Facebook and Twitter. We are excited about this ministry and invite you to share in our enthusiasm. This is Susie wishing you all of God's blessings in your life. We now return to the Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Okay, let me add to what Susie said. There's a special opportunity this Sunday. This Sunday, June 10th, we are having a silent auction to benefit all of the programs that we have at In His Shoes, at Epostle, at the Armenian Church Youth Ministry Center, all of the outreach that we do. It is a silent auction, and one of the items is, yes, listen to this, you get to have dinner and be a guest, either on the Next Step or on Compass. It's of your choosing, but you get to have dinner with the whole gang, okay? I'm talking about Susie. I'm talking about Ani, about Ken, about Vahe, Linda, and me. We're all there, okay? Where the whole gang is there, you get to have dinner with us and then be a guest on the Next Step and Compass. You get to bid on this. It's easy. Come to the auction. If you're in the Southern California area, it takes place this Sunday. Do check out our show notes. There's directions on how to get there. It's a wonderful afternoon. You get to meet so many wonderful people who keep this mission going, who keep this ministry going. If you're out of the area, you can bid on this item. Just drop us an email at feedback@epostle.net. Feedback@epostle.net. Put in your bid for this dinner, and then put in a maximum. Like, in other words, do you want the bid to keep going on? So you would mention a bid, like X number of dollars, and my maximum bid will be X number, Y number of dollars. And so along the way, if other people are bidding, you will be in competition with them. It's a fun way to raise some money, and it's a fun way to get together and share in this ministry. Do check it out. We will have notes on. We will have the information on our show notes today. Well, that wraps it up for today's show and wraps it up for the fourth year of The Next Step. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed producing it for you and have been enjoying producing it for you. We look forward to seeing you next week when we start off the fifth year of The Next Step. In the meantime, do check us out at epostle.net. Check us out on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. We're all over the place. Check out the mothership in issues.org. But if you want the programming, epostle, easy to remember, apostle with a knee, apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe. For the wonderful team who put today's show together, for Susie, our producer, for Ken, our engineer, throughout the years, I gotta remember his name, right? He's not with us today, but I gotta remember. Wonderful fella. For Ani with her bubbles, for Vahe, who does all of the electronic work and the websites, for Vadajana put together this wonderful tune. This is Father Vasken, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
We trust you've enjoyed this broadcast. This episode of The Next Step, as well as all previous episodes, are available for downloading at epostle.net or at Apple's iTunes Store. To write to us with comments or questions, please direct your message to feedback@epostle.net. Your kind prayers and donations ensure the continuity of these quality broadcasts. For the production crew and all the members of the In His Shoes Ministries, this is Susie, looking forward to taking the next step with you again next week. And now here's the fine print. The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.